What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome to the very first Wealth Without Wall Street bonusode.
Bonusode?
What's a bonusode? It's something super exciting.
It's so exciting you didn't even know what to say it was.
That's right.
But that's so cool though, because this is an episode that we wanted to create outside of our normal. We usually produce a show either on Wednesday or Thursday, and we wanted to throw this one out for a weekend because right now you're probably sitting around the pool. Maybe you're out taking a hike, walking the dog, whatever it may be. And this is for you, entrepreneur. Like, this is your story because it comes from one of us. It comes from one of these like inspiring people who wants to bring passion to
the world. If I could sum this up in one word, it is inspiring, right? This guy, Jim Cavall, we've been friends for a long time, but I learned things in this interview that I am just blown away by.
Well, I remember whenever we finished, you were like, okay, I want to go run through a wall. And I was like, Stallion, easy now. You know, I mean, that body's not chiseled anyway. You know, like it's going to be like a dull hole in the wall, bro. Like, let's don't go after that.
Well, but reality is, as entrepreneurs, we need to hear messages like the one today to keep us focused on the prize, the end mission. That's what I want to just pay attention to today, that Jim shared with us, and I'm not going to spoil it, but his end mission is what's driving him through all the adversity that he faced as a child and growing up. I mean, I can't wait for you guys to hear some of these stories. They're amazing.
Well, and the number of businesses that he started and completed and has moved on to, right? And he's right now, he's rubbing shoulders with some pretty cool people, which I think is going to be interesting to hear too. But I am just with you, Joey, that this was one of the neatest stories. And I will tell you, it's so cool that the Stallion and I probably talked about 3 minutes out of the whole episode. We were sitting back in awe, just listening. So I want you to get into this story wherever you are today and listen to this. And it's our first bonus. So hope you enjoyed Jim Cavall.
All right, welcome in, Jim. We're so excited to have you in the podcast room with us today.
Oh, man, it's great to be here. I go way back with both of you guys, so it's kind of surreal being on air, so to speak.
Oh, we're going to have to bring up the Montevallo days for sure.
Of course.
I mean, this is a chance for Montevallo to get incredible national highlights here, right, on this podcast.
Montevallo's been getting a lot of it between
from you specifically
the music industry, right? Because we saw our boy Sam Hunt get his album out there, Montevallo.
Oh man, that's right.
I feel like we've got a lot of people here in Birmingham, especially who've done some really cool things and gone out even outside of Birmingham to do some great things. My buddy Eric Sanosensio is with the Houston Texans. Dwayne Peavy with Kentucky, number 2 AD now there. So it's exciting, some of the things Montevallo is doing, even beyond Alabama.
So for everybody who is not familiar with Montevallo, it's a small liberal arts college just south of Birmingham. And it's interesting, though, from a guy who's from Syracuse, how did you get to Montevallo?
Well, there's the short story and there's the long story. I'll try to tell the short story, but at least give you a little few tidbits from the long story. A guy that I went to high school with in Syracuse at Christian Brothers Prep, who I looked up to, great athlete. His name is Jeff Seeger. He went to Montevello to play baseball because he had a couple things go wrong for him at his first school, where he was really a phenomenal athlete, Division I athlete. And so if he didn't have those things go wrong, he never would have left, never would have went to Montevello, and I probably never would have ended up there, because I followed him in his footsteps a few years later because of my dream to play college baseball in the South, and got a scholarship for Montevello to play there, and thought, you know what, I'm going to take the risk, take the plunge, check out Alabama. So I went 1,000 miles away from home. No car, no cell phone. Those who know me well now could probably not imagine me with no cell phone. But that's how it started for me in Alabama, and turned out to be an amazing blessing for a lot of reasons.
Well, you have an interesting story. I mean, and we'll dig into that. I mean, but as the audience is sitting here listening, they're probably like Googling, you know, who's just Jim Cavall? What's influencer, right? They're going to see your history goes back to, you know, playing baseball to, you know, starting your own tech business in college, right?
Yep.
That was due in high school football recruiting, which is big to a lot of people who are listening on this. Maybe not our buddy Stallion over here. He's not a real football guru.
What are you talking about? The foosball?
Exactly.
I love the foosball.
But to also becoming the president of Iron Tribe Fitness. We've had some of the other Iron Tribe guys on here before, to then helping your wife start her own online business, Glow. And then now with influencers. So you've had a really interesting track to where you've gotten to. And there's been some real key things that I think our audience could pick up from this journey, because there's a lot of risk taking and a lot of hard work, but also a lot of payoffs within it too.
Well, listen, I mean, I come from a place where, you know, a lot of people I grew up with that are my age, we all were just old school. You know, we were raised by hardworking people. Syracuse is a city that's unfortunately declined a lot, because a lot of the businesses that made it what it was are gone. Businesses like GM and Carrier Corporation, who of course gone abroad lately. But you know, we were raised in a pretty blue collar town. You know, middle class, blessed with great parents. But I went to a prep school where I was with a lot of affluent kids that were sons and daughters of CEOs and politicians. And it was the best of the best academically and the best of the best athletically. And I was blessed to be able to go there. But during my time growing up in Syracuse, I endured a lot of hardships that that I wouldn't wish upon other people. But I'm blessed that they happened to me, because they created things like perseverance, hard work, risk-taking, vision, things that I use now every day as a father, as a husband, and definitely as an entrepreneur. So I would say, like, my upbringing has really set the stage for me to be who I am and where I'm at. And so, you know, when I talk about hardships, my mother was diagnosed with kidney disease when I was 3 years old in 1985. And she was really on her deathbed, and she miraculously received a kidney transplant before she passed. And that kidney transplant saved her life. And she really used it as a new lease on life, I say, because it's almost like she leased another, what ended up being 27 years of life when she got that kidney transplant. She did end up passing in 2012. But during those 27 years, she had multiple kidney transplants. She was living on dialysis a lot. But you never would have known it if you met my mother, because she was a picture of perfect health. She was a personal trainer in the gym. When she was on dialysis during the 27-year period, anytime she had their three-day-a-week dialysis sessions, that probably would be Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, because Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, she was in the gym training people, pouring into them, changing their lives with fitness. And it was a secret that she was sick. And so I watched her live this life. I also watched her use her faith, which we grew up in a phenomenal church, Bible-based church in Syracuse called Believer's Chapel, that really had a big impact on her to be able to handle being sick like she was and living basically a dual life out there in the open. And so that built a lot of character in me. That taught me the value of perseverance. That taught me the value of pouring into other people, just watching her live her life. And then at the same time, when I was 12, I had a near-death experience of my own where I was playing baseball, went to catch a ball over my head in shallow center field. So I was playing shortstop. Picture me right now, ready for the ground ball to get hit, right? Pop fly, goes in the shallow center field. So I turn around, running toward the center field wall, trying to make a Willie Mays type catch over my head. The center fielder's running full speed right at me. He doesn't call me off. It is his job, Mark Fazio, that's his name, to call me off, okay? And instead, we hit head on head. And I literally de-cleated, go up in the air, land on my back, completely unconscious, depressed skull, 38 pieces, front skull collapsed.
Wow.
And so I'm laying there on the field, bleeding out of my eyes, my ears, my mouth, my nose, unconscious, game stop, game canceled. Okay. Ugh. Everybody's out on the field. Mark Fazio has a cut over his eye that took 3 stitches to fix. He's fine. He supplied the impact. I received the impact. Oh, I go to the hospital. And unconscious, I wake up once real quick in the ambulance and I tell my mom, remember the prophecy, because she had been prayed over for years while she was sick that she would see me graduate from high school. That was always her biggest goal. I want to see my son. I was an only child. I want to see him graduate from high school. And so I woke up real quick and I said, Mom, remember the prophecy. You're going to see me graduate from high school. Pass back out, get to the hospital. They give my dad a decision. And they say, listen, your son's forehead is depressed. We need to do either frontal lobe skull surgery, which means we go in, we cut him from ear to ear, take his face off, repair his skull with titanium alloy screws. He will look normal. He will not be deformed, but he will probably have very low brain functionality, and he will definitely have a lot of epilepsy and epileptic type reaction with seizures, because when we go in there, it's like playing doctor. With tweezers. We're picking up pieces. We're moving things around. Fluids get released. It's just a very dangerous surgery. We cannot operate. We can still go in there and clean him up. He'll be deformed, but brain functionality much higher. What do you want to do? We got to make a decision in an hour.
Oh my gosh.
So my dad's there praying with the other people from our church who are there, my mom, and he decides to operate. And so they cut from ear to ear, take my face off, repair my forehead with titanium alloy. And as a parent now, I have a 15-year-old girl, and I also have a 6-year-old girl and a 4-year-old boy. I can't imagine any of them being in this situation and me having to make decisions. So I still, Dad, if you're listening, you're unbelievable. Great decision it turned out to be, because they gave me 38 staples. Mark Fazio got 3 stitches. They gave me 38 staples. But they cut from ear to ear. You could, if you meet me or see me, you'll see a big scar from ear to ear. They took my face off. They repaired me. I got out. I was in the hospital for a few weeks. Never had one seizure. Took Dilantin rest of the summer for seizures, and still never had a seizure. And by end of August, this happened in June, I was back on the field, John Olerud style, helmet when I'm playing in the field. for those of you who remember John Olerud from the Toronto Blue Jays, who wore a helmet playing first base. But, you know, I mean, it was unbelievable. And I, you know what? Reality is, I take it for granted. That's why I love doing these interviews, is I get to tell the story, remind myself that I could just not be here right now. I could not have had my mother raising me. She could have died when I was 3. Those two things were trajectory changers. They were ricochets that sent me in different directions in my life. And I have zero doubt that they were part of God's plan for me, just as much as somebody might say, oh, the horrific thing. How could God let something like that happen? He used those things to work in me growing up before I ever left New York.
Wow. I mean, that is huge. I mean, you can totally see. I mean, we talk about it all the time with entrepreneurs that freedom is what we desire. You've been granted freedom since age 12 that you've just continued to move on.
Playing with house money.
Yeah.
I'm playing with house money. You know what I mean? Like, I totally could not be here right now. But that is something I do forget a lot and take for granted. And you know what touches me is I'll meet people with my scar. Matter of fact, we had a guy work at Iron Tribe for a long time, Clint Bryan, who had the same scar as me. He got in a car accident, I believe. But you know, I meet people all the time who aren't as well off from it, you know, and it's a great reminder of how fortunate I am to have gotten through that. But when I got out of high school, I had an all-state baseball career at Christian Brothers. I played basketball as well. Could never play football because of my injury. But when I got out of high school, I knew I wanted to play college ball, but I didn't want to be far away from my mother because of, you know, her being sick. But she really pushed me. She pushed me to dream. My dad and my mom always taught me that the room was better because I was in it. And they always instilled that confidence in me. And so taking risks and doing things that, you know, some people might be a little intimidated by didn't hit me the same way because of them instilling that in me. And my dad, my mom and I used to talk every day. She passed. Now my dad and I talk every day, which has been kind of cool for us to have the relationship we have later in his life. And he still, every time I get off the phone, I feel invincible. You know what I mean? I can pitch anyone. I can talk to anyone. And so that is how I was bold enough to say, all right, I'll go down to Alabama. And I went down to Montevallo, and you can't imagine what it was like culture shock-wise. Because listen, when you picture Alabama growing up in New York, you don't picture Birmingham. You picture Montevallo.
Yeah.
Okay? That's how you picture it. The only thing it was missing were the dirt roads and the horses.
And people actually wear shoes.
They wear shoes, and there's a red light. But
yeah, I did not expect that when I moved to Alabama.
I did. Yeah, I mean, you know? It was a culture shock, but the people were great, of course. Right. And, being a part of a team, you know, meeting the guys was great. And the guy I had followed down was already playing pro ball with the Yankees. He had went to Montevallo a few years before me and really sold me on doing it, but he would come back during his off season and spend time in Montevallo. And so I had him there to soften the culture shock too, but it was an adjustment. But that built a whole new set of character too, because now it's like, well, you say you're a networker and a connector. We're going to drop you here 1,000 miles away with people who think you talk different and look different, because there's hardly any Italians in Alabama, or at least not as many as I'm used to growing up in New York, Joey.
Hey, right? You know, absolutely.
And so you talk different, you look different, and you have a different perspective. Can you adjust? And you know, it took a little bit, but I did. And what was so great about Montevallo was, as much as I had fun playing baseball, I really became an entrepreneur. I never took a business class. I've never taken a business class in college in my life. But now I teach it to people. Now I get invited by professors to go teach business and tell my story. And I think it's ironic. It's not the first time you've seen that, right? Like, you've seen a lot of people who didn't get into a school, but the school is where they grew up. And all of a sudden they make a lot of money and they give back to that school with, you know, the Phil Knight School of Business, yeah. Right? Like, but that being said, you know, for me, I wanted my parents to hear my games. And if not hear them on the radio, I wanted them to see them on video, but they're all the way up in New York. So I started figuring out through some existing companies I researched a way to stream baseball games on our athletics website at Montevallo. This is back in 2003. So YouTube's not even around yet. And so we used this streaming service. It was called Stretch Internet. They're still around. And we embedded a streaming player. And we started not just doing baseball, but doing basketball. They needed the talent, so I became the talent, the engineer. I bought my first Apple computer and became the post-game highlights editor. We started putting a TV show out, and I was doing everything and loving it. And I loved the generalism of it. I had to raise money. I had to get sponsors. I had to find student workers and convey a vision to them of 100 broadcasts in 1 year we're going to do for all these sports. And I loved it. And so when I graduated from Montevallo, the dream of playing pro ball had faded. But the passion for being an entrepreneur and building a business that could scale what we did at Montevallo to other schools. So after doing all that, like I said, I love the generalism of it. I thought, you know, I think I'm gonna start a business doing this for other colleges. And you know, there's a lot of small Division I, Division II schools who need to stream their athletic events. They have hundreds of people who will tune in between parents and friends, and I'm going to go find them. And so as I started to do that and build that business, and I had another friend who wanted to be involved with me on it, and I ended up building a small team of 5 people, we realized there's a real problem with these schools when it comes to recruiting. They have trouble with their budgets in finding these small Division I, Division II caliber kids. You know, the blue chip kids, everybody knows who they are. They don't really even need any promotion because Alabama's going to find Julio Jones. But finding Jim Caval in New York to go to Montevallo
is tough.
Is tough. And so that's what gave birth to NextSpecs, which stood for the next prospects. And that was a new product within my business that we built that ended up being the main product. Because there was a lot of subscription revenue opportunity in selling high schools on the ability to profile all their kids online with highlight videos, academic transcripts, and then help them connect with a directory of college coaches that we already had built and connected with. And so we ended up forming statewide partnerships with Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia to distribute this free to all the kids, with them paying on the front end with a subscription model. And man, we had some great success. And then I made my first enormous mistake in business.
Hey, nobody that's successful is not going to do that. So
this wasn't just perfect. A little one. This was an enormous one. First big lesson for all those aspiring entrepreneurs out there, especially tech entrepreneurs, but really anyone. And that is don't ever give up subscription recurring revenue, right? So I had the opportunity to basically get reach through these state high school athletic associations that would cost an Alabama Power $250,000 a year to get directly into all the high schools through the association. But they were willing to grant it to me if I would take away the subscription revenue and find a different way to make money, which at that time, this was 2008 and 9, ad revenue and banner ads and those things were a way to make money. They're not anymore. So if you're trying to make money off of banner ads, I advise you to stop. And if you're advertising for your business with banner ads, I definitely advise you to stop. But we did a deal with Hibbett's Sporting Goods that made me feel good enough. It was a good first chunk, six figures of revenue that I felt good about. So I was like, listen, if we can start with them, there's more like them out there that will sponsor this to reach the kids. We can make it free to the associations, get the reach, which will get us more value, more kids using the site. I'm going to do it. And so I took the plunge. I did it. And it ended up being a really bad decision. We couldn't make up the difference as fast as I wanted to. And we were lucky because there was a few other recruiting outfits who had started and had traction. We had good technology. We ended up selling the website, the recruiting technology, in 2010. And it was a perfect segue for me because I was I had just gotten married to my wife, Yasmin, who I met here, another Northerner who somehow ended up in Birmingham. And we met, Puerto Rican, I'm Italian. We live in Birmingham. Who would have thought? And we started a family. We had Savannah, our oldest at that point. But it was 2010. I was exiting out of the business. I had a new family. And I was working out at this new gym called Iron Tribe. And it was in downtown Homewood. And I become really close with the owner of the gym. He's a great guy. He was another, you know, fellow entrepreneur. We traded business books. We just became friends. And as I exited out of NextSpecs, I was looking for my next thing, praying about it, probably the closest I'd ever been in my prayer relationship with God, because I was just kind of, I'd never been searching so much and asking him so much for what's next. And so I felt led to go to Forrest, the owner at Iron Tribe, and say, hey, what do you think about like this being like a national brand and us being partners? And he said, well, you know, I mean, we don't have a second gym yet. We haven't proven it's scalable. Typical Forrest, a lot of wisdom, very full of wisdom. So he had a lot of great thoughts, but he said, you know, if you can open up the second gym, it can be, you know, something like 5-10 miles from the first. I'm not there. You're there executing the model, maybe even coming up with some new things I haven't built system-wise for the first gym. Then maybe we can get an investor involved. I have one in mind, and we can start a franchising initiative. And I thought, yeah, let's do it, because I really believed in what I had experienced there as a client. And so I remember my father, my wife, other friends, when I told them I was opening up a gym, because they didn't look at it like we were building a brand. They looked at it like you're opening up a gym and you're opening up in Alabama, like where fitness is like not popular because everybody's overweight. Cause that's what people think that don't live here. Right. And I'm like, no, like we're in Birmingham, like fitness is on the rise here. This gym has a good brand behind it. I think I can really help be a part of taking it, you know, national. And so I believed in it. And I mean, I'm telling you, not even people closest to me believed in it at that point. but I believed in it. And so I opened up the Iron Tribe Gym on 280. We hit all our numbers. We got a guy involved who had a lot of experience in franchising. He was the CEO of Express Oil Change, still is, Ricky Brooks. He became our investor, and me, him, and Forrest started the franchising company. So we started Iron Tribe Franchise about 2 years after the first gym opened. And at that point, we had four gyms that we co-owned together as partners, but we had this new franchising company we started that we believe could bring Iron Tribe to the whole country.
Okay, so at this point in your career, you have now left a business that you started from scratch, mm-hmm. one that you created mm-hmm. out of nowhere, mm-hmm. a streaming system that then you created a high school recruiting model out of it. You sold that. You started a gym model that is now expanding in your franchising.
Yeah. Yeah, and the funny That's part huge. Is, it is, but the funny part is because I didn't have this huge, sexy exit with NextSpecs, and I knew deep down I had made some mistakes that could have made it so much more valuable, I was so motivated to avenge that and to learn. And it's almost like if that didn't happen, if I didn't make that bad decision with the subscription revenue at NextSpecs, I never would have went to Forrest and said, hey man, what do you think we partner up? But the decision to go to Forrest was huge for me because not because we ended up growing it from one gym to 47. That's impressive to say. But the journey of doing that, I mean, the things that I learned about being what I would call a missional entrepreneur and connecting the bigger mission of the gospel to your business because of what we did with Never Thirst, and Iron Tribe still is doing with Never Thirst, raising millions of dollars to bring clean water to places like India, Nepal, Cambodia, in the name of the gospel. Like, I learned that from being an Iron Tribe. What I learned about leadership, you know, we made a lot of hires, whether it was big hires, leaders. We moved here from other cities that had VP level positions that we had to lead every day, or whether it was hires in the gyms who were leading the gyms or training people. We made a lot of hires, and not every hire we made was the right hire. And we learned how to hire. Matt White talked about that on a recent podcast, I'm sure,
yeah,
with Culture Index. And I use Culture Index with my businesses now because I believe in that. But also how to lead, how to let go. Made a bunch of mistakes, you know, learned a ton about leadership. So, and I was in a brick and mortar franchising industry that honestly I'll probably never be in again. But it was a great experience to be in that industry and being back in tech to say that I have experience in brick and mortar and franchising is rare. So I've kind of seen both sides of the business world. So there's a lot more, but I think Iron Tribe, and obviously I was able to exit from Iron Tribe in a way where, you know, I did make some money, and it was a great launching point for me with what I'm doing now. And so just to tell that story briefly, after 7 years being at Iron Tribe, we had this vision, Forrest and I, of we're gonna have 500 gyms. We actually went to this seminar with a CEO we really respect in the tech world, who helped us formulate this 5-year vision. And as usual, both of us think very big. We came back and said, we're gonna have 500 gyms and here's the whole plan. And our staff looked at us like we let our leadership team speak into it. We told them it's not final. And they were like, let's start with 100. You know what I mean? Because I think at that point we were like 20. We were like, okay, we'll start at 100. And so we had this whole vision. It connected to the pro forma and every part of the business that we projected. But as we started to push toward 100, we realized who our franchisee is. And he or she is in the market and they know the market. They've lived there. They have a sphere of influence there. And they're going to lead the gym on a daily basis. It's not just an investment from afar.
Not passive.
And there's so many things we learned from franchises that did great and franchises that didn't do so great that we realized, okay, maybe we want to be a small giant. Maybe we just want to have 50 gyms and just have 50 great gyms. And so as we saw that, and you could just see it on paper that was the story that the financials, that the business itself was telling, the marketplace was telling us, it was clear to me that Iron Tribe did not need a president and a CEO doing a lot of the same stuff. We weren't big enough to do that. And I never once had Forrest or Ricky, my two partners, come to me to say that. I went to them and I said, hey, listen, I can go do something else. Like, I've got other things. One thing in particular is my wife wants to start a business. And we started having those conversations, and over a year, it led to me really going to Forrest saying, I think I'm ready. And the beautiful part is those guys are so diligent in everything they do that my partnership was drawn up in a way where my exit was swift. We knew what the value was of my ownership, and I was able very quickly to go to my next thing. And so that's where I exited EarnTrap at the end of 16 and invested my time and money into helping my wife launch Glow.
You have talked about a ton of different things. I love all the stories that you're sharing. One thing that I want to kind of hone in on here as we start wrapping up is your focus on missional business. And mm-hmm. you kind of just talked about this before we started our recording today about what your passion is, that if the business goes away, and when the business goes away, like ultimately we're leading towards freedom. Mm-hmm. That's what our podcast is about, is financial freedom. It's building a business that's an investment that can become passive or sellable. Talk a little bit about your passion and how you kind of came to that, and then in your involvement with Aspire.
So some people are blessed by God to be natural stewards. They're blessed to be fiduciarily responsible without having to be taught lessons or go through bad decisions or whatever. I feel like God with me will continuously like let me experience a little bit, but never too much, more than I can handle, and teach me the real reason that he's giving me anything he's given me. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about relationships. I'm talking about my marriage. I'm talking about everything. So with business, because it's all about money, I've never been on the cover of Fast Company, and I've never had a multi-million dollar exit or anything like that. I'm 36. I'm not going to be this crazy story we all read. You know, you see him all the time on Fast Company. 23-year-old sells his company for $4 billion, right? You know, like that's not who I am. God has blessed me in ways where he's teaching me. And so I made a little bit of money from the first thing, and it allowed me to transition well into the second thing. I made a little more in the second thing, and I learned a lot about being missional so that I could take the money and the missional teachings into the third and fourth thing, right? And so during the time I was at Iron Tribe, because of the work we were doing with Never Thirst, I've always had a passion for local and global. I don't believe that you should choose one or the other. I believe you have to do global to see the reality of the world and to reach unreached people groups. And the Great Commission at the end of Matthew is real, and we're called for it. But locally is the other 51 weeks a year where you're here and you have a chance to touch people that are in need as well. And so Jason Williams, who was the urban missions pastor at Briarwood, and that's when we met, he had this passion to start something called Aspire, which was for the fatherless here in Birmingham. And it was one-on-one, life-on-life mentorship, but it's based on a ministry in Dallas called Mercy Street, which created this model of 9-year commitment for the mentor to the mentee to get them from fourth grade to graduation from high school. And they proved that worked. And so Jason wanted to take that model, start Aspire, and he did that a little over 6 years ago here in Birmingham. And I was one of the first mentors. And then Jason said, you know, I really want to get out of my urban missions role and do this full time. And I was a part of the board that funded and helped him do that. And now I chair the board, but I'm also still a mentor for Mackay. And so I've always been told that I'm going to be around kids by people who've prayed over me, by people who know me, like you are going to be around kids 10 to 20, encouraging them. You love sports. You love to teach. You love business. There's things that kids want to learn that you can teach them at a young age. And so with Aspire, I get to itch the scratch as a mentor and as the board chair. But for me, these two new businesses are all about building something that will create real true equity and value for my family to be able to be in a position to give more time and money towards something like Aspire in the long run. So like if I had a big exit today with either Influencer or Glow, I think the first thing I would be thinking about is how do we take the Finley Center in Hoover that my kids get a chance to experience every day and put it in the middle of Birmingham? And what could a building like that do for these young kids, these fatherless kids especially, who are growing up without without the teaching they need in so many areas to learn things like how to code, how to be an entrepreneur, how to go to a job interview, how to manage money, how to, you know, respond when you get into a conflict. Of course, sports would be a big part of that. Those kinds of things. I just feel like I could spend the rest of my life in sweats around kids in that situation. And I'm ready to do that when God tells me to do that with all my time.
Well, that's just as an entrepreneur, you're passionate and you want to share that passion with others. And I think everybody listening to this is saying, yeah, there's things that I want to get involved in. And I think it's just motivating to hear you verbalizing that because it's in our heart. We want to do this.
And that's what's going to power you through the difficult times when things are not all rosy in your business, yep. right? And you've had a transition. Those were hard times. It was, I'm seeking the Lord, like, what should I be doing right now? But if you have that missional drive behind everything you're doing, that's what's going to get you through those things. Without that, what are you left with?
No doubt. You're not left with anything. And that's the thing is, like, when you look at somebody who's been very successful, meaning financially or whatever else the world would say is success, right? Well, why do some of those people kill themselves, right? Like, why are we seeing suicides? Because Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade and any of the others you want to name, Robin Williams, to the world, they had everything. But the reality is, and Forrest and I used to always say at every business conference we've ever been to, we saw a great speaker, we heard a great story, we'd always look at each other after and say, then what? Right? Because you want to achieve this so bad and then you get it. And then what? Right? In the second version of Wall Street, the one that came out 5-6 years ago, Josh Brolin standing there, he's the kingpin in this new one. And the kid from Transformers, forgot his name, the famous young actor from Transformers is in the movie as well. He's kind of the understudy. And he looks up to Brolin and he says, what's your number? And Brolin says, what do you mean, what's my number? And he said, you know, every guy's got that number where if they hit that number, they could just leave it all and sail off and just have peace. And he said, oh, my number. He said, my number is more. Mm. And it's funny, the name of your business, right? Wealth Without Wall Street. But Wealth Without Wall Street is the fact that the real only peace that you'll ever get in your life will happen when you meet your maker and you live eternally with him. It's not supposed to be peaceful here. Read Genesis.
Yeah.
Men, you're supposed to toil. You're supposed to toil. You're going to deal with anxiety. You're not going to hit your numbers. You're not going to get every deal done you want. You're going to worry. You're going to deal with it all. That's all part of the promise in Genesis.
The
curse. Yeah,
absolutely.
The only peace, the only rest is going to come in him. And so the way you get to experience him here is you get to serve people.
Man, I don't know any better way to end this. So I'm going to just say thank you for being here. That was awesome. Your gift of telling your story is what we all need to learn from. And so I'm grateful you're able to be here today.
Can I add one thing?
Please.
So my new businesses, one is Glow, and really that's my wife's, and she runs it day to day. It's Beauty on Demand, Uber for Beauty. But Influencer is my new business that's almost a year old, and we serve college sports programs and political organizations now with an annual subscription that helps them store all their content and then distribute it to a network of influencers who can reach 10, sometimes 20 times more people on behalf of their brand. But, you know, we didn't talk about them, and that's okay, but I want to make one point. The influencer exists to help people tell their story. And we help them do that by getting them the content they want to be able to share on their platform. So we help influencers tell their story on behalf of the brands they represent. And in sports, that's athletes and teams and leagues and media companies getting those athletes content to be able to share and tell their story and grow their brand. You know, I cannot tell you, whoever you are listening, enough to not be afraid to tell your story. You don't have to be great on social media necessarily at telling your story. It might just be in one-on-one conversations. But we have got to get better in America at telling our stories and listening to other people's stories. Don't let a one-line bio on somebody's social media or their most recent post about what they think politically or religiously stop you from getting to know them and hearing their story. And don't let it stop you from telling them your story. Because if we all had more empathy for each other in this country, we would solve all the problems we have. If we could all go pursue somebody who's of a different sexual orientation, yes, I said that, a different political party, different religion, different age, different industry, different than us. If we could find 8 people different than us each year and hear their story and hear why they are that way, why they think that way, and have empathy for them, then we would have a different country. So don't be afraid to tell your story. Don't be afraid to listen to other people's stories and be human. Because if you do that, we will all come closer together as a country.
Very cool. And Jim, thank you so much for coming on. I will leave you with this little nugget. As Joey and I just got back from the podcast movement conference in Philadelphia, I learned that K-Swiss, a shoe that was popular when we were kids, is now coming out with a brand. And you know who they're targeting? They're no longer targeting the
entrepreneurs.
Yeah, they're going after
entrepreneurs. That's why they went with Gary Vee as the face of it. And
isn't that cool?
It is cool. It's a new demographic, and it's honestly the reason that podcasts are so successful now. It's the reason that you see shirt companies making things for entrepreneurs now in your feed, and you know it's a new growing demographic. It may change if the economy changes, but right now it's hot.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you for being here, Jim. And we'll see you on next episode.
Thanks for having me, guys.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.